The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
I'm delighted now. We're joined by one of the greatest ever Irish football internationals. He's here as part of Repack Team Green for Recycling Week. Paul McGrath, thank you very much for being with us here on the programme today. There's lots of football-related things I want to ask you about, but one thing I'm really fascinated by, you were the PFA Player of the Year back in 1993. Raheem Sterling this year won it. And Raheem Sterling has been fascinating the way that he has taken up the cudgels against racism in English football and European football. How do you think things are now for players compared to when you were playing?
In the last couple of years, it seemed to have got worse, to be honest, Matt. When I was playing, you'd hear the odd shout from someone or, you know, calling you this, that or the other. But there seems to be groups of people now that are catching on to this thing where they're you know, intimidating black players and stuff like that. And I think what Raheem has done this year, I think, has been amazing. I mean, he's not a big man or anything like that, but he's used his format. He's been playing magnificently, obviously, for Manchester City. And he's used the format to speak out, which takes a lot of guts.
Yeah,
takes a lot of guts because he obviously he'll have a place in Manchester and stuff like that. But he's been very brave and kudos to him for taking on the scum that say those things to black players.
Yeah, because I suppose now there is a wider support for him as well, that people will stand up with him, and players, there's been talking, particularly in Italy, it's been more of a problem there in Italy of players walking off the pitch in support of players who won't allow themselves to be abused from the stands. Did you get much support, though, in those days when you did hear people shouting things at you? Were other players willing to stand by you at that stage?
Yeah, they were willing to stand by you, but I don't think they fully grasped what it was that was happening to you, because in those days, I suppose it was a gift, you know, we earned a little more money than the average probably,
spectator.
So you just kind of tended to put up with those sorts of things. But realistically, when you were called it, it did hurt, and it did have my way of dealing with it was to try and play as well as I could so I could upset the human being that shouted at me. So
it didn't distract you? It didn't actually sort of make you go into your shell?
No, not at all. Not at all. Jeez, it would have been a totally reverse thing where I would have said, right, I'll tell you what, you've got a really good striker here today. I'm going to try to do my utmost today to stop this person scoring today and to show you what a good player I am. And for that reason, sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't, but a lot of the times it worked out.
Of course, that's from the fans. Did it ever happen from opposition players? Because you know in sports they talk about sledging, where there's, you know, deliberate attempts to upset and intimidate the player. Did you ever have that experience of people using racism as a way of sledging you?
I have to be honest, Matt, no.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, not in football terms. When I was younger, I was in Ireland when I played against certain people. I remember playing in the farm up in Monkstown, and one fella said, "Don't go near that ball again, or I'll do you this, that, and the other." And it only made me want to get the ball and have a run at him a little bit more, you know. Obviously, because I thought I was quite quick then, so I could keep away from him if I did get the ball. So, Not so much players saying it to you, no. I didn't experience too
did
much
Did you
of
experience
that.
Much racism growing up in Ireland?
Where I lived, because I was brought up in an orphanage and stuff like that. Mm. So it was a way of berating you and keeping you basically what people thought should be your place by calling you certain things at certain times. But it, more times than not, just used to start fights and you know, whoever won the fight then would have the last kind of say and stuff like that.
But do you think, is Ireland good now for actually managing to put a lid that we have very little overt racism?
Well, I think Ireland's brilliant. And, you know, from the time that I started, from probably about 16 and that, I grew up in Ireland. I went out in Ireland. I went playing soccer games all over Ireland. And like I say, you did sometimes get the odd idiot that would shout something at you and you'd want to step over the... You know, there were only the rails then, and try and knock.
Almost doing Eric Cantona on it.
Well, almost doing Eric Cantona on it, but you'd be afraid of missing. but no, Irish people, by and large, to me anyway, I think I don't know whether you had a certain respect even at 18, maybe that you were a pretty good player, and people wouldn't want to for some reason it didn't seem to give me much trouble. You know, I was out. I actually played out in Dalkey at that stage. And people would think you were a fairly decent player, and they wouldn't. You know, I've had fights on a football pitch because the only time I was ever actually sent off was for someone who did actually call me something. And
was that?
That was out in Dalkey.
Okay, you were never sent off in the professional game, were you?
No, never ever. So that's that. But then this was a team that I grew to love, Fatima, where we were playing Fatima out in Dalkey. And the Reed brothers were playing, and they were someone I've since went to Pats with, and stuff like that. With Billy, I went with Billy Reed, who's since died. That's Andy's father, yeah. But I actually one of their lads called me something on a football pitch, and I just went up with my left boot. I don't use my left too often, but I just kicked him straight in the stomach, and then I just turned around and I walked off the football pitch because I knew I was going to have to walk anyway. And to be honest, he was a big guy, so I was walking quite quick off the pitch. But that's the only time I was ever set. Yeah, got
sent off. It's a fantastic record for a centre half to have never been sent off in the professional game. What would you make of the way the current game is played? How do you think you would have fitted in with the sort of the way it's played now?
Oh, it's too fast, Matt. To be honest,
Adjusted, wouldn't you?
I'd like to think if I was training the way the lads train today, I could have adjusted. But to be honest, I love the speed of the game now. I love the way the players are much more, you know, they all know what they're doing on the pitch. It's much more of a team game where they all move and bring the ball to diamond shapes. There's this, that and the other. But I also love that part of the football that, you know, when you need to lump it into the box, you need to see two people fighting in the air for the duels. I miss the duels, the headed duels, when you've got a defender fighting for it and a striker going in to try and score a goal. And especially when the guy who's putting it in has so much time to put the ball in, but a lot of them now are turning back out and possession football, I think they call it now, because they want at the end of the game to know they've had the ball more than the other players.
Which isn't the object of the game. The object of the game is to score more goals.
Score more goals, so put it in there and let the players fight it out.
It's not as if tackling is a dying art either, but it does seem that central defender is the position you played. It's more about intercepting now a lot of the time, isn't it, than actually making tackles.
Well, that's another thing, yeah. It's about reading. It's about reading where the ball is going to go.
That would have suited you.
And I would have loved that part of it. That's the part, the biggest part of the game I think I did get right was trying to read before the players even pass the ball and trying to get there as quick as possible and make sure that you're there first and making what looks like a good tackle, but you know you're a stride ahead of them anyway. It looks good.
Of course, you made reference earlier to the fact that when you were playing, you weren't paid an awful lot more than the spectators. Now, it's expensive to go to a Premier League match these days, but my God, the money the players are making. Do you ever feel any jealousy about that? Or
no.
Would that have been almost too much to actually try and deal with the excessive money that they get?
I wouldn't have been able to deal with the amounts of money they're getting now. But I think it's getting a little bit absurd that a player can be sitting in the stands like Sanchez, say, from Manchester United, and on $500,000 or close to $500,000, and not even playing, not even putting his foot on the pitch that week, and still walking away. That to me is it's just,
I think it's obscene.
Ridiculous.
To many
it is
people.
Obscene. Yeah, it's obscene because it's, you know, there are people who have to ask for you know, bags of food to feed their kids at home at weekends, and I just don't think that's right that you should give anyone. And to be honest, even if I was playing now, I'd be saying the same thing. I got paid a lot of money back in the day, and I still think that it was too much, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, because it was a lot of money. It was an awful lot of money. And
yeah, but think of the money that Manchester United and then Aston Villa and teams like that brought in on the back of what you were doing for them.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think, well, I was the one who signed the contract. So I especially with Aston Villa, I was very happy because they doubled my wages. When I went to Aston Villa, I got double what I was getting at Manchester United. So to me, that was like Villa saying, we really do want you. And Manchester United saying, well, we really don't want you. So I thought I'd pull out all the stops for Aston Villa and try and do my best for them, because I felt a little bit of love there, even in that gesture, when I didn't even ask for double my wages. I was waiting to see what they were going to offer me. And Graham Taylor, God rest his soul, just said, well, we're going to double your wages and I'll try and get you. Yeah, And even when Doug went out of the room, Doug Ellis, who's another one we lost, he actually, Graeme Taylor turned to me and my wife, Claire at the time, and just said, look, I'll try and get you a little bit more, son. And I was thinking, you've already doubled my wages. Why would you want to be trying to get me more? I'm happy. I'm delighted. So
I can't imagine many modern day players thinking like that.
Well, amazing. But you know, a great time for me playing for them.
Indeed. Would Aston Villa be the team that you would have the most sentiment for? I mean, I'm sure Manchester United fans listening might be horrified by the idea, but probably your best football was played with Villa, wasn't it?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, I still have a lot of love for Manchester United, because I think no player, even if you play in the reserves for Manchester United and you're lucky enough to play over a couple of years, you can then say you played for Manchester United. You know, it might not have been the first team or anything, but I think you walk away from there with a kind of a set of values that, you know, I did anyway. I used to watch clips of Bobby Charlton, you know, Best, Dennis Law. And it's only when I went over there that I realised how good Bobby Charlton was. You know, I'd watch clips of him scoring goals from 30 yards with a ball like that was like cement. And he'd hit the ball and it would stay hit until it hit the back of the net. And there were incredible shots of him scoring goals and stuff. And then when you meet people like himself or Sir Matt Busby walking around the ground, and he'd stop and he'd actually have a conversation with you and say, son, and he'd often say to me, son, just keep doing what you're doing on the football pitch, because everyone was giving a little bit of complaints about me and stuff.
So. Of course, you won FA Cups with Manchester United, but there was a long 26-year gap between winning what was then the First Division and then the Premier League.
Yeah.
Is there a danger for Manchester United that they could have a similar long gap, the way things have fallen away in recent years, that they now seem to be dropping behind the main teams and have a major crisis to deal with in getting rid of players, underperforming players, and trying to find new ones to come in at a time when they don't have Champions League football?
Yeah, but I always think there's always going to be a pull towards Manchester United for certain players, because they know what a huge club it is. One of the biggest clubs in the world, if not the biggest club in the world. So there's always going to be that pull for certain players.
But will it be the right players, though? Because you've mentioned Sanchez and his money, and it seems he went there for the dosh.
Yeah.
And look at Paul Pogba as well. I mean, there's another argument that, again, he just seems to have gone for the payday, and now off he'll go again to pick up more riches somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's what I hate about the club at the moment. I think there are certain players like that who've got... I don't know, 20 million people on their Facebook and things, and they can be selling bits of, I don't know, stuff you put in your face or whatever. They do sell on those things. But I don't believe they're concentrating on actually trying to play good football for Manchester United. I really don't. And I've said it in my tweets about Paul. I don't think he gives it everything every week. He loses the ball in midfield. He doesn't chase back. Yet he's a wonderful player. I watched him in the World Cup and I thought he was brilliant for France. But why can't he translate that into being brilliant for Manchester United? Because I think it's too much of all these pictures he's getting taken and all the money that's coming in elsewhere from some of his stuff.
You were mentioning earlier how much you enjoy the pace of football. We've had some extraordinary football recently, particularly the semi-finals of the Champions League. And we now have, of course, the... what has been described as all-English finals, because it's Liverpool against Tottenham in the Champions League, Arsenal against Chelsea in the Europa League final. But they're not really English games, are they, as such? I mean, they're English clubs, but there's only a handful of English players involved.
And no
English managers.
Well, yeah, that's it, you know. But I just think what's happened over the last couple of weeks in English football is just ridiculous. And then you get asked what's going to happen with Aston Villa and West Brom.
After what happened to Leeds, I've been trying to avoid discussing the Aston Villa derby match next
Monday. I wasn't even
going
to mention Leeds. No, but you can't, it just goes to show anything can happen in football.
Yeah.
You know, when Barcelona went to Liverpool, I just thought, well, obviously Barcelona are going to score one goal. They have to score one goal. The way they played over there, they were brilliant. Messi just showed up, the free kick in the top corner and all. I thought, they've got to score one goal. So no matter what Liverpool do, Barcelona have to go through. And then I thought about the Dutch. I thought, aerially, I thought Spurs would have enough to score a few goals in the air.
That wasn't the way they got through.
That wasn't the way they got through. It was unbelievable. And the week just no one could have predicted that week.
And do you still enjoy watching football as much?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I just don't like this thing about when you put your hand on someone's back and they fall over. All that sort, and all this holding your face stuff, and that, I can't be doing with that. And, you know, Patrick Bamford, I think it was, that went down, and he went down a couple of times.
In the Leeds game against Derby as well.
I hate to say it. I didn't want to bring it up.
Would you want a player like him playing for Ireland now? Because he is eligible, apparently. He did play one match at under 18 level before going back to England. There's talk that he could be available to Ireland next season. I mean, I don't know if he's good enough, but we're short of strikers, so would you take him?
Oh, I would take him like a shot from a gun, because I think he is good enough. But all I'd want him to do is just stop doing the silliness. Like, you know, I don't know whether he's got kids or not, but you don't want kids seeing that sort of thing where you're holding your face or you're falling forwards when no one's really even touched you. It's not on. No one should be doing that. It's just ridiculous. Makes you look a fool.
As a former Irish great, what do you make of what's happened to the Irish international team in recent years?
I think we've just, you know, a lot of people have been just choosing probably to go the English route, and you know, we haven't concentrated enough. I don't know what's been happening with the FAI. I just think that's a sad state of affairs, really, as well. And you know, but that happens every so often to teams, that you have that lull, and then you get a sprinkling of brilliant players coming back up again. And I think, We need a Robbie Keane and a Duffer to come back soon.
We need players like them, or even players like yourself. It's been so many years since you played. What year did you retire?
97, 98.
So 22 years or 21
yeah,
or 22 years.
Yeah, quite a long
years.
Time ago.
And you're still a much loved figure in Ireland. That's why Repack have asked you to get involved in Team Green. Can you tell us a little bit of what you're doing with them?
Yeah, well, I was delighted to be asked, because I've got five grandchildren now, and I just think this plastic thing is gone, as you know, it's gone too far, and I think you know, we all just rinsed out bottles and reuse them and things like that, or don't throw as many of them in the street and dumping things everywhere, and you know, there's a lot we can do as a nation just to help out and make. You know, maybe not for our generation, but for the younger generation, make life a better life for them and a lot easier.
Paul McGarth, it's been great seeing you. You're looking great.
Lovely to see you again, Matt, as well.
Thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.